Future Crusaders. You are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Holosuite Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Attention on the battle fleet. This is Captain Ramaskos of the Imperial Star Cruiser Vox Arcona. Please listen carefully to the following announcement.
In accordance with the Codex Astartes, we hope that you have a productive trip to Arcona and arrive with the will to deliver the Emperor's judgment. Thank you.
Attention, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona, Mission 8, recording on Sunday, June 21st, 2015, and coming to you from the Battlefleet... Wait, what?
Greetings, traitors. I am Diamonds, and I'm letting the worms Katsu and Gigabyte use our new Vox Relay for chaos!
Give me that, cultist? What? Ah! Gig, are you okay?
What the hell, man? What the hell just happened?
A cultist just ran on board, just ran into the Vox studio. It was ridiculous. Craziness.
Dude. Yeah, I think for this heresy, I'm going to need two bolters.
You're going to need two bolters?
I'm going to need two bolters for this one.
We're going to need something. It's kind of bad. Okay, I'm sorry about that, Crusaders. Apparently, we've got cultists on board the ship. We're going to get Captain Ramaskos on that to hunt down the traitors and route them. We'll get back with you on who this Diamonds person is later, I guess. Wow, I'm not sure where to go from cultists now. I'm like, what's next? Eldar? No, not yet. Not till after Founders Axis.
Oh, dude, no.
It's fine. If an Eldar showed up, they'd just be like, hi, and then they just leave. It'd be weird. It'd be awkward. I am Katsu, and I'm sharing our Vox Relay with Gigabyte. How you doing, man?
I'm not too bad. Very tired, but not too bad.
Well, if this makes it any easier, I don't know about over across the pond, but here in the United States, it's Father's Day, and we both have a particularly awesome thing in the fact that this is both of our first Father's Days. Am I right about that? Yeah.
Yes, indeedy.
So I'm a stepdad and you're a dad, and it's our first time doing this, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very proud daddy.
I am an extremely proud stepdad, so it works out. Speaking of our daddy, we talk about our daddy on Terra, the Emperor, and the game he's letting us play, Eternal Crusade. Anyway. I didn't really know how to segue there, so I just threw that out.
It works.
Right. As a reminder, a housekeeping note, we still have Vox Arcona's Great Crusade Sound Off going until June 29th. In order to enter that, you record an audio file. We prefer WAV or MP3. Introducing yourself, the faction you're going to be fighting for on Arcona, and stating that you listen to Vox Arcona. Right now, I would say that the field is fairly open, and by the field being fairly open, I mean no one has sent us anything yet. But this means that you've got a good, what's the 21st today, so you got 8 days to get it in. We will be recording and announcing the winner within those 8 days, so definitely get with us and send in a shout-out. I mean, anything will work, and you will be in the running. As of right now, as of this moment, you have a 100% chance of winning the contest. And I'm not a Mechanicus or a Servoscribe or anything, but that's pretty good odds.
Totally, and don't forget, you know, we'll be playing them on the show as well, so...
Yeah, so that's that's bragging rights. And also, if you're part of a standing battle unit / guild that is forming in Eternal Crusade, you can even give them a shout out too. Like Gigabyte
totally.
And I, are working with Vigilia Mortis, so which may reflect some commentary that may be going on. Whatever. No stories by Graham McNeil have been released recently, although I have a feeling that given some of the information that has come out this week, I'm guessing that we're going to be seeing fiction toward that effect.
Oh, I hope so.
So, Into the Warp 23, we're going to kind of bounce around our show notes here because they're not really, like, there wasn't really a lot of non-EC stuff. We talked about this last week, like, with E3 going on and very little by way of Eternal Crusade stuff at E3, we don't really have a lot to talk about other than the show, other than the podcast or the Twitch, which will be up on YouTube Monday. So basically, it's going to be up on YouTube at the same time that we get this posted to iTunes and whatnot. So do yourself a favor. If you are listening to our podcast right now and you have not seen Into the Warp 23, then stop, go to YouTube, watch 23, come back, and we should have some more, and then we'll be cool. So, 23. So, it has been officially announced that the Loyalist faction leader will be Belial, Grandmaster of the Deathwing, which is the first company of the Dark Angels, like we've covered.
Totally called it.
Yes, you did. Because remember, well, we were up in the air about whether or not it was going to be Belial or Sicarius, you know?
Yep.
Or some other random guy or a wolf lord.
Belial was one of our like hard picks from the get-go,
yeah,
you know?
True. Which, you know, I really don't think I'm going to listen to this guy. Like, I mean, great, he's the faction lead, we'll do what he says, because, I guess. But the thing is, like, the story behind Belial is that he's this really badass dude, and his big thing is that everybody is wrong for some reason. And so even after great fights that have been complete and utter domination on the field, he still goes basically man-to-man to go, you screwed up here, you screwed up here, you didn't change your bolt clip at the right time. It's just, like, I don't want to be told how wrong I am. You know?
Yeah, so the problem with Belial is that he's, like, this extreme perfectionist. Yeah, that makes for some very annoying people.
Well, I also think that we're going to have a problem because, well, I mean, I get why he's here. He's here because we have the Dark Angels have confirmation of a Fallen on the planet. Mm-hmm. So that means that we're rerouting everything that we're doing to stop these guys. Now, never mind the fact that none of the Dark Angels really know why they're there. But
true.
Because you wear green armor, so you don't know shit. Anyway. there was one thing that I wanted to point out. David, in the End of the Warp, was like, you know, well, I know there's some pushback about Space Wolves and Dark Angels, you know, not listening to each other, but, you know, whenever they gather, they have a tournament among themselves, recreating an interaction that the two Primarchs had with each other. So really, there's sort of a respect between warriors there. And the problem is, well, first off, we've covered the Dark Angels and we've covered the Space Wolves now. So for those who have gone through the lore and whatnot, like, there's no respect there. They're doing that because their Primarchs did it, and they're doing it to honor their individual Primarchs. The Dark Angels do not like the Space Wolves, and the Space Wolves do not like the Dark Angels. Space Wolves don't really like anybody.
True. They're also doing it so that they don't kill each other. You know, they do this honor duel to get the frustration and the pissing out, you know?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's in both codexes that even though the tournament occurs, that doesn't necessarily mean that no additional violence happens. It's just that this is the structured way that they've decided to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really kind of biting at each other's heels the whole time.
Yeah.
Also, the vote for the fifth Loyalist subfaction has begun. The vote starts on the 24th, which is this coming Wednesday, and it'll run for a couple weeks like normal. The three options are the Raven Guard, the Iron Hands, and the Imperial Fists.
I don't really think there's a choice, because go Imperial Fists.
Shenanigans. Why rigged.
Why shenanigans?
Rigged. Why? Rigged.
Why?
No. The only other one there that has had quite a bit of support on the forums has been the Raven Guard. I've not seen that many people espousing the Iron Hands, to be honest. I'm surprised they didn't put the Salamanders in there, but well, we know why that is, because they're not going to bring in flame weaponry and stuff until later. But
right, well, that's the thing. Like the Raven Guard. Like, here's the deal: if the Imperial Fists were not on the table, let's say it was Salamanders, Iron Hands, Raven Guard, which, by the way, all first foundings, so I'm good with it. But if the Imperial Fists were not on the table, I would vote Raven Guard, because they did bring up a good point in the show, and it's something that White Kong talked about last week or the week before. The Raven Guard are not, despite being a founding chapter, I mean, they are a first...
And a fantastic
they
chapter.
Are a first
really
founding...
History.
Yeah, I mean, they're a first founding legion, but in terms of novels, in terms of gameplay, in terms of anything else, the Raven Guard are woefully unrepresented in the 40K universe.
Woefully.
The only thing they have going for them, and I have to correct myself for Raven Guard fans out there, about three episodes ago, I misnamed the captain that is the only Raven Guard special character in the history of Warhammer 40K, and that is Kaven Shrike. Who is currently behind enemy lines of like a Hive fleet or a Waw or something. But he and a small detachment of Raven Guard assault marines are like behind enemy lines fighting a hit and run battle that nobody really knows how it's going to resolve. Like, that's, if I remember the lore right, that's where the Raven Guard are right now.
And the annoying thing about Shrike is that he's like the third company captain. He's not even like the first captain or something, you know, he's like the third company captain.
Yeah, it's like all we know about the Raven Guard is there's this dude, Kaven Shrike, who's a badass. but the none of this changes the fact that as a Celestial Lion, which is a successor chapter of the Imperial Fists, and as my brother, Onishi, is a Black Templar, which is also a successor chapter of the Imperial Fists, like, I have to back my bros on this. So I am going to be wearing... when the vote passes, I am going to be wearing amazingly gaudy yellow armor and shooting people viciously with bolters.
I have to question... I'm really starting to question the EC team's knowledge of the lore now. You know, with the whole Dark Angels and Space Wolves thing. But also, when they announced the three choices for the Loyalist sub-faction...
Right.
David mentioned that the... Imperial Fists' original colors were supposed to be gold, and I mean, I've been playing Games Workshop games since I was like, so many years, and I've never ever seen them in gold. They've always been yellow.
Well, that's because the Imperial Fists, the gold armor was Heresy era.
No, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't. The only one of the Imperial Fists that wore gold was Rogal Dorn. And that's because he was the Emperor's Praetorian.
Well, that could very easily be where the confusion comes in, is the fact that Dorn wore gold, so the assumption is that all the Fists wore gold.
Possibly.
But that's, you know. But even then, it'll be awesome to do the lore piece on the Imperial Fists when they win. People can vote on the 24th. Look, hey, this is a better discussion than you get on Into the Warp, because all during the Chaos vote, it was like, well, you could vote however you want to, but the Crimson Slaughter's going to win. Like, we're at least, you know, putting up our reasons other than, like, we want watered-down Berserkers.
It makes me laugh with the popularity of the Imperial Fists. You know, as good as they are, it makes me laugh that most Imperial Fist fans don't acknowledge the fact that they're self-flagellating zealots.
Well, here's the deal. Like, I know a couple of people that are diehard actual Imperial Fist fans. You know, Valrak, who's one of the moderators on the EC forums, is a prime example. But a lot of the Imperial Fist
fans. I mean, listen to my justification for why I'm voting Imperial Fists. It has nothing to do with the fact that I like the Imperial Fists. It has everything to do with the fact that I am a son of Dorne. You know what I'm saying? Like, I come from a successor chapter to this Legion, so I'm backing my Legion.
Right.
The same thing with my brother, who's a Black Templar. He's also a founder. He's going to vote for the Imperial Fists. I know a handful of players that aren't Imperial Fist fans, but they're Crimson Fist fans. They're Pedro Cantor fans, especially from back in the day.
Yes.
Where, especially back in the day, where on the tabletop, if you included Pedro Cantor, then Stern Guard counted as troops choices.
Yeah,
and so
that was
that's,
very cool.
You know, we're not saying broken, but broken. Anyway.
Yeah, just a bit.
So the thing is this, though. Like, I've met a couple of diehard Imperial Fist fans, but most of the people that I've encountered are Black Templars or Crimson Hand or Crimson Fists. You know, the other IF successors.
The other white meat.
So on to the Twitch, which, yeah, the loyalist sub-faction and the faction leader were part of the Twitch, but, production updates, we had Katie, Brent, and David in. I have got Nathan in the show notes, but he never made it.
He was there in spirit.
He was there in spirit, but not a disembodied head this time. but they covered the cover system. They showed off low cover, high cover, sliding to cover, and also the fact that when you're in cover, if you sprint, shoot, or evade, you'll drop out of cover immediately and either stand up or, in the case of the evade, you'll stay knelt down.
I do like the Devastators going into cover. That's interesting.
The fact that they don't actually go into cover?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, yeah.
The fact that they brace their huge goddamn, like, bolter weapon on the cover itself.
Right. I like the fact that, well, at that point, you know, it's sort of like Space Marine, how whenever you came across a bolter, I don't know if you ever did this, but like when you come across a heavy bolter, like I never left that damn thing on a tripod. I always tore that thing off and started shooting.
Totally.
But I like how you can, when you brace with the heavy bolter, it turret mounts basically. But I also like the fact that if you look at the crosshair on the screen, it goes down to like a pinpoint. Like you can put that bolt around exactly where you want it once it's braced, and I think that's a really cool thing. I also like the idea that they're not going to do that with last cannons, multi-meltas, and plasma cannons. So, one of the things, the other thing I like is that it was a throwaway line, but it's a line I'm holding them to. Is that plasma weapons will have an arcing fire mode, so you can kind of lob plasma over things, which that sort of accounts for the, you know, grenade launchers in the Sword of the Millennium.
So that was an interesting little, like you say, throwaway line. It was quite sort of like, hey, did I hear that right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is this: like at this, the reason they say plasma weapons will have an arcing fire mode is that they said they're working on making sure that the plasma weapons have an arcing fire mode. So that is their current design plan. Because really, otherwise, like plasma weapon, like, the thing is this: like you can do plasma weapons as a built-up, as a charged shot, but really after a while that gets boring. Especially when up close you're going to have melta weaponry, and at decent range you're just going to use your bolters.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, I don't know whether they listened to us or not, but I'm going to say they listened to us, because if you noticed in the 3v8, in the like horrifically unbalanced gameplay, nobody used las cannons. They used stalker bolters. And in fact,
I think they're doing that to make a point.
Brent even broke out this. Well, remember last week I said that it's really, really difficult for them to go every single week saying we're trying to tone back the last cannon. We're trying to tone back the last cannon while they're shooting people with the last cannon.
Yeah, that's right.
And the thing is this: like, I also think I also think that there's a perception thing. Because if I see them shooting with the last cannon, then I'm going to say, wait a second, the developers think that this is how you sort out a problem, so this is how I'm going to sort out a problem.
Exactly. Well, this is what I'm going to do.
Whereas if I see the developers using a stalker bolter, like, yes, I know a last cannon is going to eat whatever I'm shooting at for lunch. But for people who are wanting to see the performance on a stalker bolter, like, why should I use a stalker? Why should I scope with a stalker instead of shooting a last cannon? Like, we need to see why. If I remember right, the stalker bolter was firing a 3-round burst. So, like, a tight proximity scope 3-round burst. That right there, and at the speed that a bolter fires, like, that right there is an incentive for me to use the stalker as opposed to the last cannon.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing, and it made me sigh, is that the Death Company are Blood Angel veterans, or quote, Death Company are Blood Angel veterans, so they will definitely be in the game as veteran Marines.
Somewhere Whitecong is screaming in pleasure.
End of quote, sigh. I understand. Well, no. I understand that the Death Company are an elite choice in a Blood Angel army, but I also know that it's not necessary. Like, you don't get to stay Death Company.
Like, no. Like,
when you're DC, you fight till you die, you know?
Pretty much.
So it may be nice to see them as an elite unit, or as, like, a veteran unit, where you, like, pay requisition points to spawn one for a while.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see tons of Death Company all over the place. It will make me sad if they. It will make me sad if they do. For a moment,
they'll do it.
No, for a moment, and then as the Imperial Fist, I'll look at him and go, "Well, that's a lot less Blood Angels that I have to deal with." Anyway, the shooting, the combat, it was good. Lots of good fighting. The only thing that I didn't like is that the teams were horrifically unbalanced. And by horrifically unbalanced, I mean it was like 3-6 at one point, and you felt the tide against you. And then it was 5-8, and you still felt the tide against you because they were contesting one point, basically. And Chaos had taken the point, and then they set up just a huge defensive ridiculousness around that point, like heavy bolters on top of crates, so they were suppressed. Like, as soon as they saw the loyalists, they were suppressing the hell out of them, so the loyalists couldn't fight back. Half the time they were throwing grenades, the grenades were bouncing back. So I mean, it was just a really, the game was beautiful, but I think it was a poor showing of the game and what it can do right now. Which, I mean, don't get me wrong, this is 23 into the warps, and you're gonna have even if you're playing the game, you're gonna have a dissatisfying match once or twice. Like, it's gonna happen. But so it wasn't a particularly stellar thing, and while they were showing off cover, it was kind of marred by grenades bouncing backwards and lots, and like a very an orchestrated chaos deployment. which, whether it was organized or not, was, yeah, whatever. The Q&A, though. Somebody asked, can a raptor grab an enemy, jump into the air, and drop them? The team said that would be cool, but it's not something that they're working on right now. It may be a cool execution or a cool way to do certain things, but it's not going to be something that they're working on at the moment.
Later.
Later.
Guarantee it.
Dreadnoughts, people keep asking about dreadnoughts, and they stated not at launch, but dreadnoughts are an iconic piece of Space Marine war gear, so we're probably going to see them at some point.
That really makes me laugh, because loads of people are asking about bloody dreadnoughts, and yet no one bothered playing the dreadnought maps in Space Marine at all.
Well, but why do you want to be a giant dead warrior? Oh, wait.
It just really weirds me out that everyone's asking about it now, and no one bothered playing it when it was available in Space Marine. It's just very odd.
Right. Katie confirmed that there will not be a non-disclosure agreement on Founder Access, which is awesome.
Yay!
Because...
streaming for the win.
Well, first off, remember, we've been... like, when we first started this... we made the commitment that as we got closer and closer to being able to put ourselves in the game, we would transition this more from a podcast more toward a broadcasted show. And so what we, you know, as soon as we can get into the access, granted, I have a captain pack, and you and White Kong have sergeant packs, right?
I will have a captain pack eventually.
You're like, ah, ha, ha. But the point of the matter is, I have a captain pack, the two of you have sergeant packs. As soon as we can put even one of us in the game, I think that we're going to actually be twitching.
Totally.
That we're going to be twitching where we are and what we're playing, especially since, speaking of Father's Day, my family was incredibly awesome and got me a rig capable of both playing the game and broadcasting while I do so.
Oh, nice.
Oh, dude, you don't even know. Like, I've been upset because they got me the computer, and it's an amazing piece of equipment. And then I had to go work 3 days as a relief they got it for me, and then I had to work 3 days as a relief operator. And then my next 3 days, I spent moving information over from my laptop that I used to broadcast on to my desktop. And then I am now in the middle of an 8-day work shift. So, I'm looking forward to next weekend because I'll have it off for about 6 days in a row. And I'm probably going to disappear into a computer-induced, like, goal. I'm going to be the Emperor. I'm going to just plug myself into the Golden Throne and just disappear for a week. It'll be great.
Nice.
They did confirm that there will be an achievement in-game for killing a dev, and that the devs will have tags so that you know to shoot that guy, which sort of makes me feel sad, but also the devs can enter invisible mode, so I'm not like, feeling too bad for him.
Well, all I can say is I'm going to keep my eyes out for that tag.
Katie is down.
There's Katie, killer!
Right? Well, there's supposedly a community event that Katie is talking about orchestrating where she's running around a map and people have to kill her, and, like, whoever kills her the most does a thing. It's nice. She's been joking about it, so...
Nice.
So another question popped up about how they will implement the Alpha Legion style of warfare in the game, and they said that this is one of those situations where they really seriously could have looked at us, and don't get me wrong, I voted for the Alpha Legion, like, they could have looked at us and goes, well, you voted for guys that don't fight the way that this game gets played, so there's nothing special, sorry. But they said that this is going to be mostly a standard Marine-y style fight, because if you read about the Alpha Legion, and we're going to cover them eventually, the Alpha Legion are all about building up cults, and not necessarily religious cults, but, like, building up small cells of operatives and very CIA spycrafty.
Yeah, they're stuff. Intelligence gatherers, aren't they?
Right. And the problem is the way that they fight, the way that the Alpha Legion fights is... they don't go to war unless they've already won the war, and you didn't even know they won the war, because in addition to being intelligence gatherers, it's not that they're necessarily just intelligence gatherers, they are perfectionists. One of the things we'll cover about the Alpha Legion is that they were true adherents to the idea of absolute victory. It's not enough to beat your enemy, you have to beat your enemy utterly and irrevocably. And
yeah, I mean,
they go to painstaking lengths to do that.
The best way to learn about the Alpha Legion is to go and read or listen to the novel Legion in the Horus Heresy series. Amazing portrayal of the Alpha Legion. You really get a feel for them through that one.
Right. So let's see. Another question that got brought up was, as an aspiring sorcerer, will I be able to throw bolts of power and shooting lightning from my eyes? In other words, can I cast Doombolt?
Doombolt!
Anyway, the aspiring sorcerer is a support class and is mainly meant for buffing and debuffing. However, Warp Flame and Lightning are iconic and will be included. But they're really Chaos's answer to an arcade, to the apothecary. However, hero unit sorcerers will be more offensive, like, you know, ascendant sorcerers and, you know, things like that. Question was brought up if there will be loyalist-only weapons like the grav gun. They have said that there will not be grav guns, which is good.
Good.
Well, the thing is this, like, grav guns, I think we, oh gosh, I don't know if we talked about it or if I was talking with the guys at Vigilion Mortis. Well, the thing is this, like, grav guns exist as an answer to aircraft in 40K. And the problem is we don't have aircraft right now. So there's no sense in putting in grav weapons because grav weapons are designed to bust air units. However, the Loyalist Marines do use storm shields, whereas Chaos Marines don't use them. This came about because they were asking, since the auto cannons are going to be handed to the Chaos, will the Loyalists have specific gear that's theirs? I know for a fact that I think the main issue, though, is that it's not necessarily, like, the auto cannons exist on Chaos's side, but not on, but not so much on the Loyalist side. But also, plasma weapons and melta weapons were not as prevalent with Chaos as they are in.
That's right.
As they are in the Loyalist armies. Loyalists,
they were new inventions when they turned traitor.
Right. The Loyalists are more energy field type stuff, which is why you're going to see storm shields. You don't normally see thunder hammers and stuff in the Chaos side. Like, you'll see chain axes and power weapons, but I don't think I know of a single. I think they had to invent the power maul for Space Marine. Because I had never seen one on a model for a Chaos army. Like, I had some
The word bearers, power the word bearers use power mauls more than any others.
Okay. So then the final question that got asked, there were some other ones, but we're really at the point now where I'm not going to repeat questions that keep popping up. We've talked about that before. The other question was, as it applies to social zones, what's going to be in them? And they said, you know, hangout areas, social areas for talking between fights, and then training zones like driving tracks and firing ranges, stuff like that. On the whole, pretty good. What I'm waiting for now, really, what I'm waiting for now from Into the Warp is... last week we said that there wasn't going to be anything at E3, but there may be some bigger stuff coming out after E3. And so now I would really like to start seeing some after E3 stuff. Because, I mean, like, we're talking about Founder Access occurring in the fall of 2015. Not the winter, the fall, which they did confirm that they're still on track for the fall release. So if you figure, was it yesterday was midsummer / the official start of spring, or of summer. So you're dealing with June, July, August is the summer, and then the fall is September, October, November, right? So, so Founder Access is, if they honor the fall 2015 date, and things are still subject to change, this is still a game that's in development, etc., 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 etc. You are looking anywhere between 90 to 180 days before we have this Founder Access in our grubby little hands. So they're a pace. I like what we're seeing so far. It will be very interesting to watch how this occurs, especially since they literally have no pressure. For those of you listening, no pressure, but you've got, like, you know, 8 weeks to start, you know, giving us a definitive date kind of deal. Anyway, and that, of course, brings us to the end of the warp stuff, and it brings us to the Imperial Data Slate, which we will be. Let's ask the following question: what is chaos? Suffering, you might say. Oppression. Deceit. But could not all of these things be said of your Imperium? You hunt down the talented and the strong-willed. You break them or sacrifice them. you lie to your citizens and wage war on those who would dare speak out. The inquisitors you call masters assume guilt and execute millions on a whim. And why? Why do this? Because you know chaos is there, but you do not know how to fight it. So you crush your own citizens for fear that they might aid the enemy. The Imperium suffers because of chaos. No matter how hard you fight, that will never change. Chaos exists in a state of permanent victory over you. You dance to our tune, mortal one. You butcher and torture and repress one another because the gods of the warp require you to. The Imperium is founded on chaos. My Lord Zench won your war a long, long time ago. So we are going to cover not so much the Chaos Gods, but we are definitely going to cover the Traitor Legions, which starts our little series on chaos. Now, the important thing to discuss is that not all... Let me see how to word this, because there is a difference, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a difference between a traitor and a renegade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For those of you that don't know, renegades are basically people that have said, F this, I'm going to get a Grox burger, and they've abandoned the Imperium. They have
We out, bro.
Yeah, we out. They have not necessarily attacked the Imperium, or they have not necessarily done something criminal toward the Imperium, but they've just basically said deuces, and they have stepped away. Those are renegades. Now, traitors have done something very specifically against the Imperium.
They've turned their backs on its teachings and deliberately betrayed everything that it stands for.
Right. And so we're going to cover the Traitor Legions, specifically the Traitor Legions who later... we're going to cover the Traitor Legions today, and then we will begin to cover the legions that are dedicated to quote-unquote Chaos Undivided, which are the sub-factions that we deal with in Eternal Crusade. One thing to note is that due to the craze of Warhammer 30K and the Horus Heresy novel series, most of what we're going to talk about is in flux, subject to change, has been quote-unquote lost to myth, and is kind of in a fog of war kind of situation. So the problem is, in order for us to talk about the Traitor Legions, we really have to take this back to the Heresy. And it doesn't necessarily start where you think it starts. So, why don't you start off by covering some of the preliminary causes of the treason and the heresy?
Yes, indeed. So, as Katsu says, it doesn't necessarily start where you think it does. There's a lot that led up to the heresy, basically, although it was ignited by the product of a conspiracy by the Chaos Forces, there were many a good few precipitating factors that helped to push the Legio Astartes towards rebellion. The first was the Emperor's return and seclusion on Terra, working on a quote-unquote secret project, messing around with ancient tech, that he refused to share with any of his Primarchs. Including his most favoured son, Horus, whom he had named Warmaster. This apparent abandonment of the Great Crusade for something he would not even share with his sons bred mistrust, resentment, and disappointment towards the Emperor amongst many of the Primarchs. Secondary contributing factor was the formation of an administrative body known as the Council of Terra. Many of the Primarchs viewed these human bureaucrats as usurping their rightful place as rulers of the Imperium they had fought so hard to create. Worse still, the Primarchs were denied a place on the Council, and the notion of any Imperium dominated by human bureaucrats, not the Sons of Emperor and the Legions Astartes, became a cause of concern for many of the Primarchs. And lastly, the Emperor's disciplining of Lorgar and the Word Bearers was a contributing factor to the heresy. Basically saying, hey, look, dude, I know I'm awesome, but yeah, you shouldn't be worshipping me as a god, because, like, that's not cool.
Oh, we're gonna cover that.
After Lorgar and his entire legion were publicly humiliated, scolded, and forced to kneel in front of the Emperor for spreading their belief that the ruler of mankind was a divine being, the pious word bearers felt betrayed and desperately sought any power in the universe to worship. This eventually led Lorgar and his legionnaires to the Eye of Terror, where they pledged themselves to the forces of chaos and began to conspire against the Emperor. Thus, the word bearers had secretly became the first Chaos Space Marines.
In short, Space Jesus stood in front of them and said, "I am an awesome, crazy, super powerful being. You are bad for telling people that I am a divine being, and in fact, I'm so angry with you, I'm going to psychically make you all kneel in front of me and humiliate yourselves, even though I'm not Space Jesus. I'm not Space Jesus, but I'm going to perform a miracle in front of you."
But I'm totally not Space Jesus.
Awesome. So, the problem is, so there's all this, and it leads up to, the problem that we run into at that point is that, Lorgar by himself, especially being disgraced as he was, wasn't going to be able to turn the legions against the Emperor. There's really only one person that could have done that, and that was Horus Lupercalp. Something to bear in mind is that the War Master, there had never been a War Master before Horus, and there has never been a real War Master since Horus. Like, Abaddon has claimed it at one point or another, I think. But other than that, like, really, has he?
Well, Abaddon's never claimed the title of War Master, although there would have been another War Master had Fabius Bile succeeded in cloning Horus.
Right. So, Horus was out on the moon of Davin, a place he had been to before, where he was wounded by the stolen anathema, which had been cursed by the Chaos God Nurgle, which we'll cover the gods later, but Nurgle is one of the big bad Chaos Gods in the 40k universe. The wound refused to heal, because Nurgle's thing is plagues and diseases. Which, of course, Horus's super enhanced immune system couldn't shake. None of the apothecaries could take care of it, because, first off, they hadn't really dealt with Nurgle magic yet. The Mournival took Horus to the Davinite Serpent Lodge, which they were told could heal them. However, Erebus, a word bearer, specifically the first chaplain of the word bearers, and also the first dark apostle or dark.
That's right, yeah, whatever. Dark apostle.
Yep. Come to find out, and nobody really knew this at the time, but Erebus had orchestrated the entire assault on Davin, specifically to stab Horus with this knife, get him to the Serpent Lodge, and get rituals performed on him. During these rituals, Horus's spirit was transferred into the warp, where Erebus, who was disguised as the War Master's closest friend, Hastur Sejanus, showed him a terrible vision of the very future that his actions would bring about. The Imperium was repressive, violent, superstitious, where the Emperor and some of the Primarchs, but not Horus, were worshipped as divine beings by fanatical and ignorant masses of humanity. The Chaos Gods portrayed themselves as victims of the Emperor's psychic might, who had no interest in controlling the material world. Horus, of course, by this point, was already jealous, deeply resentful, because he had major daddy issues.
Daddy never loved me.
Daddy never loved me. he was afraid of the concept of this, you know, this peace where weak-willed men ruled, and according to this vision, you know, led to this failure of the system, because he knew that the Emperor didn't want divine adulation. He knew that the Imperium was this progressive, intelligent, well-educated galaxy, and he was seeing the result of what he was led to believe was the Emperor's abandonment of the legions. So, he
took those false visions to heart, and he determined to make himself... he determined to sort this out himself and not allow the Emperor to make himself a god at Horus's expense. The problem with this was that Magnus the Red, Primarch of the Thousand Suns, had continued to study sorcery, the forbidden arts. And in his study, he kind of clued into what Horus was up to. At this time, of course, Magnus was loyal, and he appears to Horus within Horus's vision, reveals Erebus's true identity, begs Horus not to give in to chaos. But by this point, Horus has already decided that if anyone had deserved to be worshipped as a god, it was him, not the Emperor. He accepted the gift of the Chaos Gods, and in return they healed his wound, granted him the power, all the powers of the warp. They made one deal with Horus: give us the Emperor and we will give you the galaxy. And so Horus began orchestrating probably the defining moment that started so much trouble in this universe, the Drop Site Massacre. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, so as Katsu says, the defining battle of the Horus Heresy really is the Drop Site Massacre. There was a number of conflicts before that, but the Drop Site Massacre was really where it started in earnest. Agonizing over the betrayal of his most beloved son, the Emperor ordered the deployment of 7 full Space Marine legions against him. Their orders were to take Horus and the Primarchs allied with him into custody and bring them back to Terra to explain their actions. Unbeknownst to the Emperor, 4 of the Primarchs and their legions chosen for this task had already turned against him, forming a 5th column as such, which would strike against the Loyalists at the most decisive moment. The initial naval operations seemed to go well for the Loyalists. The Imperial Navy gained orbit over Istvan V, and the legions proceeded with their planetary deployment. Under the overall command of Ferus Manus, 3 whole legions took part in the first wave of landings: the Salamanders, led by Vulcan, the Raven Guard under Korax, and Manus's own Iron Hands. Horus had foreknowledge of the location of the Loyalist drop site, and his forces mauled the legions during their landings, keeping them pinned down and unable to advance. Ferus Manus engaged Fulgrim in personal combat, only to die at his hands while the Emperor's children butchered the Iron Hands. The Loyalists retreated towards the apparent safety of their brothers in the second wave, hoping to gain reinforcement. What happened next took them completely by surprise. The 4 legions of the second wave, the Night Lords of Conrad Kurz, the Iron Warriors of Perturabo, the Word Bearers of Lorgar, and the Alpha Legion of Alpharius, already seduced to the cause of Horus, opened fire on their unsuspecting brothers, slaughtering them wholesale. This orgy of carnage would later become widely known as the Istvan V Drop Site Massacre. After the battle, Fulgrim presented the head of Ferus Manus to Horus as a trophy. It is widely believed that Horus planned the battle with aid from the tactical genius Alpharius.
Awesome. Wait, who are we missing there? It's Night Lords, Iron Warriors, Word Bearers, Alpha Legion. Who's that fifth? Black Legion. So, yeah. So, like, basically, all of the sub-factions in Eternal Crusade were present at the Drop Site Massacre and had a hand in what happened. So after the heresy took, I think it was 7 years to sort out.
Yeah, roughly.
So toward the end of that 7 years, Horus and his forces, I mean, they fought back and forth, and it was bitter. I think by the time it's done, billions of chaos, billions of traitors, and trillions of people loyal to the Emperor died in this fighting. Meanwhile, the Chaos Gods are lapping up every second of all of this death energy that's going on, because as we talked about when we covered the warp, like, whatever happens in the Imperium, you know, whatever happens in the real world, like, there's a psychic equivalent that
occurs in the warp. And so the Chaos Gods are just lapping this stuff up and loving every minute of it.
They are bloated with souls at this point.
Right. But after years of bitter fighting, Horus and his forces arrive at Terra, capital of all humanity, also known as Earth. First, Horus and his forces destroy Luna's naval bases, the moon, and within 30 days had destroyed the Terran system, all of Terra's defense systems. Terra was bombarded and devastated. The corrupted Marines eventually landed on Terra, experiencing heavy resistance from the defenders, the Imperial Fists. hey, say what you want. Our home world is Terra. Anyway. Maybe it didn't didn't start that way, but it ended up that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's yeah, right, whatever.
let's see. Among the Loyalists were the Blood Angels, Imperial Fists, and White Scars. Loyalists were outnumbered, and the battle for Terra turned into a siege of the Imperial Palace, which, coincidentally, is located in Nottingham, England. it's in a book somewhere. There's geo-coordinates for the... Not just the Imperial Palace, but there are geo-coordinates for the Golden Throne. Uh-huh. And if you take those geo-coordinates and you line them up with real-world latitude-longitude, it is Games Workshop's headquarters.
That's right.
In Nottingham, England. Because it's their world, they can make this shit up.
I was going to say, they made this stuff up. Why not, right. You know?
It's like, we're just going to make ourselves the center of the 41st millennium. It's So by the 55th day of the siege, the rebels had reached the walls of the inner palace. Horus had remained in orbit in his battle barge, and was at that point warned that the rest of the Loyalist legions were returning to Terra, and would arrive in hours. The Ultramarines were pushing their way to Terra, along with the Space Wolves and the Dark Angels, and you know that if the Space Wolves and the Dark Angels are agreed on anything, it's a bad thing for you. Like, yeah. More to the point. If the Space Wolves and the Dark Angels agree that kicking your ass is a good idea, like, that's a sign.
If they agree that kicking your ass is more important than kicking each other's ass, run. Like,
there's a problem.
Run the hell away.
So, the point of the matter is, Horus had been able to play, because as we covered with the Loyalist chapters early, in previous weeks, Horus, as War Master, had managed to set these guys so far away from Terra as part of his duties as War Master that it made a stab at Terra possible. And so he knew that if the Ultras and the Space Wolves and the Dark Angels got there, his numbers advantage would become diminished. He would not be able to win this fight. So he did something unexpected. He dropped his force fields, protecting the battle barge, in an attempt to convince the Emperor to bring the fight to Horus. The Emperor saw the opportunity, teleported to the War Master's battle barge with two of his Primarchs, Sanguinius and...
Your boy.
Right. See?
Rogaldorn.
Notice? Not the Korax. Notice? Not, you know, Ferris Manus.
For those who listened to the last episode, just you know, Firefly fans, you know. Oh, by the way, Imperial Fists.
Oh yeah, did I mention Imperial Fists? Anyway, they also deployed with Terminator armored Marines of their legions, and a number of the Custodes, the Legio Custodes, who are freaking awesome and cool.
Totally.
The Emperor's forces got scattered throughout the ship because of chaos and were forced to battle their way to find each other. Sanguinius ran across Horus first, as we covered, and Horus was super badass and Sanguinius got killed. As Horus was standing over Sanguinius's body, the Emperor came across him. Huge battle. Emperor successfully defeated Horus, but he himself was mortally wounded, so to say. the Emperor survived long enough to be transferred to the Golden Throne, which is a, quote, strange mechanism that would allow him to survive forever in a state of undeath, so they say.
Zombie.
Actually, what's weird is I was reading Lexicanum the other day, and I came across what the Golden Throne actually is. It is foreign technology, but it was key to... 'cause the
for those of you who are even deeper in the lore, what the Emperor was working on. Do you know what the Emperor was working on?
Webway.
Yeah. The way for the humans to tread the webway the same way that the Eldar did.
Mm-hmm. And thus subvert the powers of chaos.
Right. But the thing is this. The way that what he was working on in order to orchestrate that was the Golden Throne.
Mm-hmm.
Which was this alien piece of crazy technology. So it's weird and sort of prophetic, and of course it was written kind of ex post facto.
I think he was basically reverse engineering, wasn't he?
Kinda. But the thing is, as this weird, you know, after the fact kind of deal, the Emperor's trying to figure out how to navigate the webway using technology reversed from the Golden Throne, but then he's killed, quote unquote, and put into the Golden Throne that's psychically fueling him to become the Astronomicon, which is the center point for all Imperial warp travel.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way, he got his wish, just not the way he wanted to.
Yeah, exactly.
So, at any rate, the Emperor's final command was to begin the Great Scouring. All forces loyal to Horus were to be hounded down and put down, and craziness. They chased the traitors all the way back to the Eye of Terror, and planets such as Davin and Istvan V were sterilized. There is nothing that grows on those worlds.
No, they're lifeless rocks.
Right. All records and the remaining homeworlds of the traitor legions were destroyed. Ezekiel Abaddon assumes the epithet of the Despoiler, and all the way up until Eternal Crusade, is the closest thing that the traitor legions have to a unified leader. He ends up launching a number of Black Crusades into the Imperium in the centuries to come. Some of them are super successful, others are complete and utter failures. And then there's the 13th Black Crusade, which the Imperium was... I seriously, to this day, and we are going to cover the Black Crusade, we're going to cover the 13th Crusade, because it's actually part of Eternal Crusade lore.
And also, those of us on this show probably took part in it. I know I did.
I did too. And not only that, but on the Eternal Crusade forums, I asked if there was something in particular that people wanted to cover. And Corel, who is a frequent chatter in the TeamSpeak, or in the Twitch, and he listens to us pretty routinely, he very specifically said he wants a lore piece on the 13th Black Crusade. And other stuff of that nature. So we're definitely going to hit that up. If it weren't for Games Workshop's intervention, like the 13th Black Crusade would have hit Earth and everything would have gone to shit. Which, again, brings us back to the myth of 999 and 41 canon. Anyway, which we're not going to do that because last episode was named 999 and 41. The myth of canon.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're kind of at the end of our content, kind of a short show for us. And we are going the thought for the day. We're going to go to our thought for the day. But first, I want to let you know that in order for us to fully kind of go through the story of the traitors, because one of the things we want to do is not... Like, even through the story that we just told you about the heresy and the traitor legions, that's a very Imperial-centric view. It tries to be top-down and kind of impartial, but really, there are some things that when we delve into the traitor legions, like, we've mentioned it before that the Emperor is kind of a dick, but, like...
he is.
when we cover the Word Bearers, and when we cover... Eventually we'll cover the Thousand Sons. When we cover some of these legions, like, they're really not... They really weren't bad. They were driven that way. Now, granted, some of the guys like the World Eaters and stuff like this, they were just gone from the get-go. But some of these guys, especially the Word Bearers, which is actually going to be our first sub-faction we cover, the Word Bearers were actually pretty fanatically loyal.
Until,
like we were talking about before,
until the Emperor chastised them. And even then, some of what the Word Bearers did still persists to this day in the Imperium. And we'll cover that next week. But like I said, I'm Katsu, and he's Gigabyte, and we are happy to bring you our thought for the day, which is when the traitor's hand strikes, it strikes with the strength of a legion. So we will see you next week, and I am going to go and spend some quality Father's Day time, and I think you are going to spend some quality lay-in-bed time, because it's what is it? It's, God, it's what, 2 o'clock?
Gone to 2 a.m.?
Oh, God. Why do you do this? Why can't you just live in the States? That way time is so much easier for us. Anyway, all right, well...
go hunt down that cultist.
I'm going to go hunt down that cultist. Anyway, you guys have a great week, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.